This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Sword and Laser, episode number 51. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And I was sad last week because we had all this amazing pre-show banter that got ruined because someone had their cell phone on. And we had all this crazy electrical interference.
I'm moving my cell phone far away.
I'm putting my cell phone into airplane mode as we speak. There.
There we go.
No problem. All right. Excellent. But all of you should currently be reading Good Omens by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. We are well through the book at this point. I'm about 70%. How about you?
I finished it hours before the podcast. I've been
really?
Listening to it on Audible. And so I decided to just push on through, and I actually finished it on my drive home from work.
Fantastic. Yeah, I've been reading the book form and really, really enjoying it. But more on that later. First up, we have some quick burns.
Gene Wolfe did not break my voice, but
I'm sorry, that was really adorable.
I'm going through the change. He is one of the deepest thinkers in the world of sci-fi and fantasy. And I think his Book of the New Sun is actually one of the best examples of sword and laser together in one book. The Book of the New Sun series, it's four different books. Well, it's actually more than that, but the base of it is four different books. Is set in a world where the sun is near the end of its life. The world used to have high technology. It's kind of devolved. And so you've got more of a fantasy element in the way things are told. But there's these leftovers from a technological predecessor, similar to what you actually see in Gilead in the Dark Tower. So, it has a much more dark and very thick intellectual thrust to it. Anyway, Gene Wolfe gave a great interview to IO9 about his new novel Home Fires, which is out, and Home Fires is a little less heady, as IO9 puts it, than some of his previous stories. It's about Skip Grayson, an attorney living in the North American Union of the near future. So this isn't one of his far epic, you know, planet at the end of its life things. It's on an Earth where there are too many people, too few resources, and continental superpowers are in constant conflict. There's also an interstellar war going on with aliens called the Oss. And at the start of the book, Skip's wife, Shell, is just coming home from a tour of duty fighting the aliens out in space. So you've essentially got a very recognizable Earth. Too many people, too few resources. Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm. A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. And then you add the alien interstellar war as sort of your different element. And he's telling our story, but with a little bit of a Heinleinian Starship Troopers kind of spin to it.
And you were saying that Josh Lawrence is a big fan of Gene Wolfe and his books.
Oh, yeah. Josh is who introduced me to the Book of the New Sun series. If anybody doesn't know, Josh is active in our Goodreads forum, but he's also the composer of our theme music.
Yes. Excellent. Well, that seems interesting. Is that something you think would be good for the book club in the future?
Yeah, definitely put Home Fires on your list. Gene Wolfe is a fantastic author, and I think we should probably do The Sword and the Claw, the first part of the Book of the New Sun, as a pick one of these days. I put it up for a vote twice, and it's never won, so I may have to use dictatorial powers.
I think that's fair. Once in a while, I think we're allowed.
And every once in a while, I get my memoirs found in a bathtub.
But not for too long in my book, as they say. Then we had a great post from Cory Doctorow over on Boing Boing, and he's talking about a book called Among Others by Joe Walton, who he's discussed a lot in the past, actually. Big fan of Joe Walton, Cory Doctorow is. And this is something that he considers indescribable. And coming from Cory, I find that really interesting, because I don't find him being at lack of words very often.
Yes, exactly. No, he's very good with words.
And he says, now let me tell you what this is all about. Among Others is the diary of Morwenna Phelps, a Welsh teenager who we really meet just after her twin sister, Morgana, has died in an unspecified but terrible way. I find that interesting. That's calling back to Arthurian legend again. I mean, those are Morgana, Morgaine, Morwenna. Like, I guess it's the Welsh influence probably has something to do with that.
Yeah, Arthurian legend is very prominent amongst Welsh folktales.
Mm-hmm. And he goes on to say that their mother is a terrible and evil witch, and the death of Morgana is somehow related to a spell that they did together to protect themselves and maybe the world from her. So it sounds like there was some kind of sisterly bond that, you know, they were trying to defend the world against their evil, terrible mother, and it all went askew, and it sounds really, really good.
And he makes a big deal, and I think this is one of the reasons he likes Joe Walton, that this isn't, you know, your expected, oh, the girl is angst-ridden and you know, she's mystical or she's misunderstood. It's an outsider tale, but it's an outsider tale where the character itself is not self-pitying. Mm-hmm. You know, Morwenna has been crippled by the accident, but it's about how she deals with it. As more of a real human being rather than some sort of caricature. You know, I think he's trying to compare it favorably to things like Twilight and Harry Potter.
Yeah.
To say, no, this is a more realistic telling of a fairy story.
Well, that's interesting to me because, I mean, I've talked about it nonstop over the past few weeks, but I'm reading the Tiffany Aching series by Terry Pratchett right now in audiobook form, and it deals with a teenage witch who lives this kind of real life where she has to, you know, be a midwife and take care of old people and see them through to the other side when they're passing away, and she has to do all these, like, homespun spells to kind of take care of the community, and it's not like a fairies and mystical wonderment.
Yeah,
it's
right.
More like real hedge magic that kind of takes care of their town and is more practical than fantastical. And so it seems like this would be a really interesting book to read after I finish that series to kind of continue that line of realistic witchcraft that is kind of seeing these girls through a turning point in their lives.
Absolutely. All right, shall we take a look at the calendar of book releases coming up?
Indeed.
We are recording this show January 24th, so tomorrow, January 25th, While Mortals Sleep, the unpublished short fiction of Kurt Vonnegut, hits the shelves. 16 previously unpublished short stories, all taken from the beginning of Vonnegut's career. So it shows how he kind of started grappling with the themes that he grapples with later to great effect. You see the seeds of it. It's always sad but interesting when an author passes away and they eventually start putting out some of the unpublished works that maybe the author wouldn't have wanted to put out, but you get to see a little of how that author worked and how his ideas were formed.
Very cool. And then on the 27th, yay, The Heroes by Joe Abercrombie. Well, that's the release in the UK. The US doesn't get it until February 7th.
And in fact, if you go to Amazon in the US and you search for The Heroes by Joe Abercrombie, it gives you this horrible teasing like, would you like this by January 26th? Because like the algorithm isn't noticing that it's not out yet.
Oh, I already pre-ordered it. So it'll be delivered to my Kindle on the date it comes out. I'm very excited.
Excellent.
But anyway, the story is, of course, of Union Commander Lord Marshal Croy. He coordinates the fight with the aid of a motley group of incompetent, self-important officers, which sounds just like Lord Marshal Croy. The strangely sympathetic Colonel Bremer Dan Gorst, who, of course, was the, you know, Luther defeated him Sorry, that's a spoiler.
Oh,
awkward. I forget that not everyone has read The Blade itself. Anyway, The strangely sympathetic Colonel Bremer Danforth is officially a loyal observer who nurses a burning desire to kill or be killed. Leading a much smaller army against the Union is Black Dow, whose grip on the throne of the Northmen is tenuous and based on fear and brutality.
Wait, that's like a spoiler to me. I think this might be post. I don't know. It might be after the after.
Oh, well, we can't say anything without giving spoilers to the trilogy.
Yeah, I know. But it's worth reading no matter what. So go
read.
On January 31st, our good friend of the show, well, I would, you know, we read one of his books once, Paolo Bacigalupi, comes out with The Alchemist. Now, this is interesting.
I would say he's a friend of a friend of the show.
Yeah, we could say that. This is his first foray into fantasy.
Ooh.
And it is one of two novellas set in a world using magic, where anytime you use magic, it has terrible consequences. So Bacigalupi is writing The Alchemist, but then Tobias S. Buckell will be writing a book called The Executionist, which is sort of a companion. I don't know if it's exactly a sequel, but it's a companion to The Alchemist set in the same world. And essentially, The Alchemist is living in Khaim, K-H-A-I-M, a city being strangled to death by Bramble, a wormy malevolence that expands its thorny vines every time someone uses magic. It's kind of like Pinocchio's nose, but for a whole city.
And then on the 1st of February, License to Ensorcel by Catherine Kerr, a psychic agent and her Israeli sidekick tracking down a werewolf murdering serial killer in San Francisco.
Based on a true, no, I don't know if that's true.
Based on a true story.
I just learned the word ensorcel today.
You did not.
Yeah,
why?
I did.
Why? How?
At the end of Tech News Today, someone told Sarah Lane that she ensorcelates them. And she's like, I have no idea what that means. So she looked it up. It means to practice kind of a sorcery. Like if you're a sorceress.
Yeah.
You already knew this, obviously. But I had never come across ensorcel.
Doesn't before. this book sound very Jim Butcher-esque?
You know, now that you mention it, yeah, it does.
It really does. And I'd be interested to see, especially from a female perspective, that kind of story being told. And I love anything in San Francisco. That always makes things about 10 times more fun when the story being told is in the city you live in.
You're like, there's my house.
I live there.
Actually, and Catherine Kerr is a great author. Finally, February 7th, Deep State by Walter John Williams. This is the sequel to This Is Not a Game, where alternate reality games and real life cross and meet. All of these that we've talked about, except for The Alchemist, are definitely available for Kindle. It doesn't say yet whether The Alchemist by Bacigalupi will be available for Kindle or not.
My mom bought a Kindle, or she got a Kindle for her birthday.
Yay, Mrs. Belmont.
I was very excited for her. I'm going to buy her books, even though she won't like any of them. And then finally, in the last Joe Abercrombie news of the day, he will be appearing in England, where I will not see him and get to stalk him. On the 27th at Forbidden Planet in London at 6 p.m. and January 29th at Forbidden Planet in Bristol at 1 p.m.
I just pre-ordered The Heroes while you were reading that.
Sweet. It's time now for an ad.
This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with, actually, I think it's now more than 85,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, we're going to give you a free audiobook if you haven't tried out Audible. It's a great way to, for me, what I do is I squeeze in extra books. I can read books while I'm driving. I can read books while I'm taking the trash out. I can read books while I'm jogging. And I can still read my regular books at night, you know, when I'm laying in bed on my Kindle or hardback, paperback, or whatever. But I can I've found that I read a lot more when I use Audible.
You know what we need?
What's that?
They need to sync Audible books with Kindle books.
Oh, that would be so brilliant. And they're both owned by Amazon.
Can't they find a way to do that?
That would be incredible.
Oh, man.
Get on that, Audible.
Get on it!
In the meantime, though, you can still listen to audiobooks, read books, and The Alchemist and The Executionist, both the Paolo Bacigalupi novel and the Tobias Buckel novel are available in one audio file.
Ooh.
From Audible.
Very cool.
Actually, it's multiple files, but it's one purchase.
Well,
to get
unless them. It's a pretty short book, they're usually broken up into multiple files.
But you only have to buy one. And in fact, you don't have to buy anything because you're listening to Sword and Laser. So if you haven't tried out Audible yet, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword and you get a free audiobook. So essentially, you're getting two free books if you pick The Alchemist and The Executionist.
Baller. That is awesome. I have to say, Tom, you sound like a totally different person. I feel like I'm doing the podcast with a stranger.
That's because I'm not Tom. No, I'm Tom. I don't know what happened.
It's Sawyer speaking in his human voice.
Exactly. It's my dog.
All right. Well, now it's time to bury your sword, which is our feedback from the audience. We had a lot of great feedback today about Good Omens, which I'm really happy about. It seems like people are enjoying the book.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I mentioned that we were reading this on This Week in Tech with Leo Laporte, and Leo's face lit up. He's like, oh, I love this. Yeah.
Good. Well, Levi started a thread saying, the date Good Omens references as the date of the creation of the world. Oh, by the way, if you're not very far in the book, this is Veronica talking, you may want to pause, skip ahead, stop listening to the show, because there may be some spoilers in the discussions coming up. Okay. So, you know, just putting it out there,
Fair warning.
And Levi says, the date Good Omens references as the date of the creation of the world is a date that was proposed by an Anglican archbishop named James Usher, or Usher.
Usher.
After what he called a literal reading of the Bible. She says, I would have preferred a made-up date that didn't reference the history of young earth creationism, as that drew me out of the book and made it difficult to get back into. Anyone else think the authors should have been stronger creationists themselves and taken less from the history of Christianity?
You know, I see what Levi is talking about. And if you're thinking that way, it could definitely take you out of the book. But I agree more with what Kate said. Kate said, I thought the opposite. In order to locate Good Omens in a world that is recognizably our own, certain historical details should be factual. If they made up some stuff, I would have been drawn out of the story myself. And I agree. They basically made a choice that we're going to live within the traditional view of the religious world, the Christian religious world. So we're going to have angels and we're going to have demons, and they're really pulling all of this mythology from medieval Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the names of the demons and the way they act and what they did and the names of the angels, all of that is pulled from there. And that is the same time when Usher believed that, you know, this is when the earth started. So I totally understand what Levi's saying, because part of me went, well, wait a minute, the earth is older than that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also immediately was like, well, yeah, but that makes sense that they would say it that way, because that is consistent with the whole system that they've made.
And also, I apologize to Levi, I may have referred to you as a she. You are quite clearly a male, and your cat is also adorable.
Oh, so nice cat, Levi.
Just saying. No, but I agree with you, too. I like that they go off the dates in the Bible. I think it kind of, it forms the book in a better way for me. It just kind of makes it all make sense. And I'm not exactly someone who knows a whole lot about the Bible in general. I mean, I went to CCD when I was a kid, but that was about the extent of it.
Oh, yeah, me too.
But the references are kind of fun, actually.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, when you're reading the Bible, you're supposed to take it as fact, and many people do. And that's how the book is being written, as though this was actually fact and that this is how things happened. And these are the characters that lived this life already. So I think it's important and relevant for it to stay within that timeline.
Now we got another comment from the aforementioned Josh Lawrence, who says, when the story kept bouncing around between characters and introducing new ones into the book, I started to think, is this annoying me because there's simply too many characters? But I've liked other books that have switched between multiple character viewpoints, and I realized that I liked Crowley and Aziraphale best and became weary when the plot strayed from their side for too long. I found them more interesting, likable, and amusing than anyone else. I particularly became weary of Adam's circle of them friends, though I realize it was important plot-wise to develop Adam's relationship with them. So throughout, I kept wishing the narrative had stuck with Crowley and Aziraphale much more, with much briefer asides for the other characters.
Yeah, I'm kind of with him on this one. I mean, I do like the other characters, and I do like getting their point of view, but Crowley and Aziraphale are definitely the central characters in my mind, and they're so different, and they have such opposing points of view that it's kind of fun to get their back and forth, and they're so cleverly written that I think that was what really stood out for me.
Now, I found what Terp Kristen wrote really interesting. She says, I have to say that might be a little bit of what's throwing me off with the audiobook. With a print version, I can go back and remind myself of people, which is harder with an audio version. Also, I'm finding that it's sometimes difficult to figure out who's talking in the audio version, which can make some conversations between characters hard to follow. I found it easier to follow the characters. So when I first saw Josh's post, I thought, well, maybe I'm not having that problem because the narrator of the audiobook has such good, distinct voices for all the characters. I know immediately who's talking, and I can keep track of Martin Jarvis.
Martin Jarvis. Okay, so what's interesting to me, and I got a huge kick out of this, especially because I'm on a Terry Pratchett run right now. You know Shadwell?
Mm-hmm.
He talks in the same way as the Wee Free Men, in the Tiffany Aching series. So when he says he doesn't say Crivens, but he says a lot of the same things like Ach Weel and stuff like that. And so I could totally do his voice of the oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm forgetting
the Witchfinder's Army.
No.
Oh, you're talking about the Tiffany Aching series?
Yeah. But it just cracked me up because, I don't know, it was in the same voice in my mind. And so that made me, it drew me into it even more. And then I was like, oh, wait, same author, right?
Yeah.
The Feagles. Sorry, that's what I meant.
Gotcha. No, and I definitely had what Terp Kristen was talking about sometimes in the audiobook where I was like, when there was not a so-and-so said and then a sentence, but instead a sentence and then so-and-so said. And I would lose the thread occasionally. But most of the time, I had a very easy time keeping up with all the characters because of their distinctive voices.
Mm-hmm. And then we had another thread from Jenny saying, what horseman would you be? You know, if you got to be one of the other ones not included in the Bible.
Right, so there's
maybe tax audit or
there's that
vacation
scene where the four biker dudes are trying to figure out what horsemen they're going to be now that they've joined in.
Oh, I haven't gotten there yet. I'm just at the scene where they meet at the cafe.
Okay, yeah. So it's not really a big spoiler, but you're within the biker place.
Yeah,
where all the biker people are. So yeah, there's a scene coming up where they all decide like, well, we want to be horsemen too.
I like how Tom, not you, says blue screen of death.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. I'm not sure what horseman. I think I would be the horseman of miscommunication.
I would be panic attack.
I like Kate's being on hold with tech support.
Patrick, pithy forum postings.
Oh, the horseman of forum trolls.
Oh, that is definitely a good one for this day and age, for sure.
I think somebody said 404 not found. That's another good one.
And then, of course, I guess one of us could be the horseman of library closures, according to Hillary. She said she's been reading about more and more library closures, including the California government trying to cut all public library funding. She was wondering about anyone else's opinion for this for two reasons. One, growing up in the library was her favorite place to be at, instead of focusing on just what your friends were reading, which included a bit too much Sweet Valley books. She would just roam around and find new authors and fall in love with new categories. And then, of course, being a poor college student that she is, as she says in her words, public libraries actually have books that I wish to read that aren't purely academic. With books being non-essential, I can't buy the books I want to read and therefore turn to libraries.
Yeah, libraries. Sad. Libraries are essential. A lot of people think, oh, well, we don't need libraries. We have the internet now. But that's absolutely not true. You need libraries because librarians are not just people who shelve books. Those are clerks. Librarians are people who manage information. And I don't think people realize the assistance available to them if they went to a library as far as finding references, doing research, understanding, you know, all kinds of topics, is what librarians do. It's what they're there for. And they can help you use the internet better. The internet has only made librarians more valuable, not less valuable.
For me, it was just a place where I spent countless hours of my childhood just, you know, perusing the racks. And that's actually one of the first places I got good on computers.
Yeah.
Because they had computers and I could go there and sit and play games for hours and rent the computers and go online for the first time. And it was really the place where I kind of discovered my love of information and researching and reading online. And I would just sit there forever, bring a snack with you. And I remember I actually donated all of my Star Trek The Next Generation paperbacks to my local library.
The Belmont collection.
The Belmont wing of Star Trek novellas.
That's awesome.
But it was one of my favorite places to go. And it was also air conditioned. I spent all summer there.
You took snacks into the library? We were never allowed
to
have food in the library.
No, I snuck them in from time to time.
Okay.
Yeah. But that makes me really sad. Tamahome says libraries should have cafes, but of course they need money to do that. But I guess if they become privatized in some way, at least for the cafe part of it, maybe that could help. I don't know. It seems like in big cities, libraries are just places where homeless people go to use the bathrooms.
Well, and actually homeless people go to use the computers as well. That is how they get email if you're not in a situation where you have a permanent residence.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. So there's a good discussion going on there right now. You should check it out on Goodreads. Talk about libraries, talk about what they're good for, talk about why we need to have them in our communities.
All right, let's do a check-in. I know, like I said, I just finished Good Omens, but we're not going to wrap it up yet because Veronica's 70% through. So what are you thinking so far of Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman together?
I love it, but like what a lot of people said, I pretty much only hear Terry Pratchett. In fact, the only time I got a glimpse of Neil Gaiman was during the Kraken scene. And that was the only time where my brain went, this feels like a Neil Gaiman section.
See, now, I have read a lot more Neil than I have Terry. I'm not sure if that colors this, but I see a lot of Neil in here. And what I love about this book is that it takes the Douglas Adams-like quirky humor of Terry, and it uses that to kind of cut the serious, foreboding darkness of Neil so that you're not too light and airy, fairy, and silly, but you're also not way too dark. Not that I don't like those things, but it's like, I don't know, it's like peanut butter and chocolate, right? It's like they taste great together. And this is really interesting. Like, I feel like all of the characterization of the Four Horsemen, all of the mythology that's being pulled in, all of that great wealth of actual medieval knowledge that we were talking about before, and all the mythology that is brought in, that's Neil. And it's in the background. Mm-hmm. And then kind of the frosting over that dark chocolate cupcake of mythology is Terry Pratchett saying, let's have fun with this, you know, and this is what Aziraphale would say, and this is what demons would be like, and they'd be silly, and they, you know, they just kind of want to get by in their jobs. And to me, it's magic.
One of my favorite things is how one of the Four Horsemen is pollution now because Pestilence retired in 1936
yes.
after the discovery of penicillin. I couldn't figure that out for the longest time. I'm like, why is this guy pollution? I don't understand.
And there are so many things like that where I just want to know, was it Neil? Was it Terry? Was it just a conversation where it kind of emerged? Like, you know, because that could easily be Neil Gaiman. He does that, right? He actually, you know, thinks in that way about myths and American gods, right? So I could totally see that being hid, but it could easily be Pratchett.
Yeah.
Because it's just funny.
Well, I'm loving the book so far. I'm scared to talk about it too much because you've definitely read further than I have. I'm really enjoying the prophecies part of the book as well. Agnes Nutter's prophecies, because they are really, they're written very cleverly.
And they're nice and accurate.
They're nice and accurate, but not nice. They mean nice as in like fitting.
I'm going to start enforcing that usage of the word nice.
I think that's good. That's a good idea. And I think Crowley is just one of the funniest characters to have been written in a long time. I love his character. I get such a kick reading him and just his descriptions of everything and how he never has to fill his gas tank and his refrigerator isn't plugged in. Uh-huh. Doesn't need to be, and all the food never goes bad. He's like a demon that is... Demon really in job only, I guess.
He's Dino. Demon in name only.
Demon in name only. There you go. But he seems to actually, a demon with a heart of gold.
I love the Aziraphale Crowley combination because Aziraphale's like the classic British uncle. Mm-hmm. Like he's like out of a storybook, right? Which is perfect because he's an angel. And then Crowley is just sort of, you know, you're roustabout, and they're the perfect odd couple friends, and they're both just trying to do their jobs.
Well, in a way, they're trying to do their jobs. Mostly, they just want to continue living their lives as they've been living them.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. It's like they're both like, you know what? We do our job. At the end of the day, we go home, have a beer, you know, eat at the Ritz, whatever
it
is.
Read my books, collect my first edition books. Yeah, I think they're great. And it's almost like a buddy comedy in a way.
Yeah, definitely. I can see this being like, you know, two producers of competing television shows or two players on opposing football teams. And then, you know, when the work day is over, they hang out, even though they're enemies, you know, in their work life. Mm-hmm. They get along real well because of that. And so, yeah, I don't want to get too far into it either, but I really like that part of the story. And I think that's what Josh was responding to when he said too many characters, is that he just liked that buddy comedy so much. He wanted more of that.
Well, I guess the part where there's too many characters for me is kind of the Newton Pulsifer storyline that hasn't really come full circle for me yet. Because I don't, you know, the witch hunters, I don't really know what's going to happen with that whole scenario. Because
yes, that will play a more prominent role shortly for you.
Right, with Anathema. Is that how you pronounce it? Anathema?
Anathema device.
Anathema, yeah. I'm reading it the way that Anathem was written. Because that's the only way I know how to say it.
Well, the way Martin Jarvis says it is Anathema device.
Okay, great. That's a good part about having audiobooks, is that you can actually ask someone how things are pronounced.
Although I don't know how to spell anything because I've only listened to the audiobook.
So yeah, that storyline kind of needs to come full circle for me. I'm not quite at the point where that's important yet, really, beyond him, Newt, and Anathema getting together at this point in the story. So I need to know kind of what happens once they actually find the Antichrist, or as he's more well known, Adam Young.
That will all come together. I don't know if you'll still like it or not, but there is more to come there.
Good. Well, I've got a 5-hour flight tomorrow, so I'm sure I'll get through it by then.
Excellent. So we'll wrap up Good Omens next time on Sword and Laser.
Yes, indeed. And thank you again to our partner, StickerFoo. Use the code SWORD1 and get 10% off the stickers at www.stickerfoo.com.
Go order a sticker. They're cheap and they're cool.
Get a sticker. Put it on your car. Why not? It's fun. We should get like Team Sword and Laser. Ooh.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
We should get bumper stickers that say Team Sword or Team Laser.
Team Laser, yes, absolutely.
We have to get Xanar to design those for us.
I like that.
She's awesome. And of course, if you want to send us in an email, send it to theswordandlaser@gmail.com. Visit the website at swordandlaser.com and check out all the discussions happening over at Goodreads at goodreads.com. Search for The Sword and Laser.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.